From the ACLU, this is At Liberty. I'm Kendall Seesmeyer, your host. The United States is home to the largest immigrant population in the world, with hundreds of thousands more seeking asylum and citizenship. America simply would not be what it is today if not for immigration, if not for the contributions of millions of immigrants who have come here, bolstering the population, strengthening our economy, and weaving their cultures into the fabric of this nation. And yet, despite this truth, many immigrants in the United States and those seeking entry at our borders continue to face a bureaucratic, dangerous system that often casts them aside. From the costly and complicated citizenship process to the anti-immigrant rhetoric that plagues today's politics, immigrants often find themselves jumping through hoops to stay in this country. That's the situation that Alejandro Martinez, an aspiring toymaker and Hasbro hopeful, finds himself in when he moves from El Salvador to New York City. One mistake puts him out of a job and left to scramble for new employment that will sponsor him for a work visa. The journey to that work visa is anything but conventional. This is the basis of Problemista, a new A24 movie starring, written, and directed by comedian Julio Torres.
It's an adjective. I define it as someone who thrives in problems or makes art inspired by problems. The movie is filled with problemistas.
Torres, who is an immigrant himself, plays Alejandro, and through his trials offers a glimpse into a dizzying and absurd reality of the immigration process. You may know Julio from his work writing for SNL or the show Los Espookies, and his comedy special My Favorite Shapes on HBO. But today, he joins us to talk about Problemista and the experiences that led to its creation. Julio, welcome to At Liberty, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So, Julio, I want to start by saying congratulations on Problemista and your directorial debut. I saw the movie, and so did our producer, and it was a journey with twists and turns. I did not know what to expect ever, and it was really fun and entertaining and also meaningful and deep at the same time, which I think can be a hard balance to strike. It's a story of the immigrant experience, which we know is obviously not monolithic, but does have many shared aspects for those who immigrate, particularly here to the United States. What led you to pursue this type of story for a movie, and this being your first feature at that? Why an immigration story?
You know, I wasn't warm to the idea of making a story that was so close to my lived experience, or that even had traces of it. Just the idea of that I found disinteresting. And it wasn't until I allowed myself to break it and to find these flourishes of the surreal and the fantastical that I weaved in through the movie that I realized, like, oh, actually, when I lift it and when I add these traces of fantasy, I am better capable and more comfortable in telling a story that feels true.
And it truly is that. It's not the kind of, like, it's not a sob story. It's not didactic in any way. And it's not necessarily the same kind of commentary we're used to seeing about the American dream.
I will say that you are correct in assessing that the movie does not intend to be a sob story. And that is because that is not my particular outlook at life. That is not true to who I am. But I will say that there is certainly space for not optimistic, bleak, slice of life immigration stories, because different people have different experiences and metabolize them differently in art. It's not that one should be more accessible than the other. It's just that is just what came out of me as a, you know, comedian and having the particular experience that I've had. And it only came when I allowed myself to be really honest with my tone and with myself that this kind of thing came about. And then I think that in sort of unraveling the problems, the bureaucratic problems of being an immigrant, in my particular experience, it's sort of like the orbit of my character touched the orbit of other characters in New York City. And then I became interested in like, well, what do their orbits look like? Where are they coming from emotionally? And in doing so, I aim to enter this world with a sense of curiosity. And there's one part in the movie where early in the movie where my character gets fired by his employer, who's this she's depicted as this like very cold woman. But a conversation I had with that actor was, you know, don't play her like she is the privileged villain in this Sad Little Immigrant Story. Play her like her job could be on the line if she summons empathy. Because I feel like that is what is so aggravating about feeling trapped in these systems, is that the people upholding them are also, for the most part, only trying to survive, and maybe they don't allow themselves to tap into their humanity because you don't know what's going on in their head. You don't know what's going on in their home. So I just hope that audiences approach the movie with the same level of curiosity that I felt compelled in digging into making it.
What parts of the movie reflect some of your own autobiographical experience? I know it's not an autobiographical movie, but there are some similarities between your lived experiences and Alejandro's, you both being from El Salvador, is perhaps the most obvious.
Yeah, I mean, the movie certainly borrows from experience, and beyond the sort of like the plot turned into the biography and inspiring the plot of some of the movie. The mother character is very similar to my mother, and my actual mother designed this like fantastical structure that we see at the beginning of the movie. But also actually like one of the most honest, true to life parts of the movie, I think, is actually the production design and the spaces and the way that the spaces are portrayed. When I showed a Bushwick apartment, I really wanted it to look like a Bushwick apartment. I was like, give me the bodega candles, give me the IKEA bags, give me the mountains of shoes when you first enter the apartment. Like, make it feel real, because the more familiar that the movie feels, the more license I think it has to be fantastical.
And as you mentioned, the connection between Alejandro and his mother, I actually noted that when watching it. Though they're physically apart, Alejandro's mom is constantly thinking of him and the little boy that he once was. She reminds him to persevere in spite of it all and stay creative in the process. And is that reflective of the relationship that you also have with your mother?
Totally and completely, as she is how I learned collaboration and how I learned to enjoy making things almost as a love language, as to like create something and together. And yeah, in terms of the like sort of like long distance parent child connection that they have, I think that's just such a part of that specific experience, where really culturally, it is most common that you will see your parents every day, even in your adulthood. The idea of like being a teenager and wanting to leave home and going off to college and those things, those are like very American traits. So like the anguish of having someone leave, like that felt so monumental, and that made it into the DNA of the movie.
Absolutely, I did really feel that. So good job there. You feature specifically the challenge of coming to the U.S. and trying to get sponsorship for a visa. That is one of the kind of collective immigration experiences that really is the main kind of plot of the story. Why did you pick that specific challenge to latch onto for this film?
You know, it because it felt like when I, because I myself, this is sort of inspired, loosely inspired in the time when I went from having a student visa into having a work visa. And that transition was such an odyssey. And what was really odd about it is it felt like there was no tangible antagonist. There was no face to the bureaucracy. And it's sort you're sort of like in this invisible liminal state where it feels like everything matters so deeply, and yet it's all invisible. And it's and this movie is not the story about someone trying to come to the U.S. It's a story of someone trying to stay legally in the U.S., which is such a silent, bureaucratic, paperwork-heavy plot that, you know, I metabolize into fantasy. And it really leans into the kinds of conflicts that we all have every, like, nowadays, where, like, I feel like so much of our lives, our anguish and our joy and our pain are in our phones. Really, an email can change your life. A text can destabilize your day. And in the same way, this movie is just like, it deals with this like intangible journey.
I really felt that, but you made it so tangible. And I think that was the most brilliant part of the movie for me, was whether it was the time kind of dripping down on the timer. You see like people actually just disappear because, well, they ran out of time to get that visa, secure extra time to stay in the United States. You also see Alejandro navigate through what seems like a unending series of doors that connect in this kind of horizontal ladder-like situation, where it's like a door leads to a door leads to a door leads to a door that seems unending, and also completely unclear as to directionally where to go next. And I think that is what makes the film really unique, is that you found a way to visually depict these things that like happen in such, like, as you mentioned, a text or an email. That's perhaps not as visually interesting as, you know, watching someone disappear from a street, if you will. One of the elements of the story that I thought was really interesting was the fact that Alejandro was pursuing toy making at Hasbro. And just the pick of that as a career path is not something that you see every day. It seems very specific in a way that is both fun and youthful. Was that part of kind of your way of expressing what an American dream is or could be, or kind of reshaping what that means?
Yeah, I mean, to be completely honest, the term American dream didn't enter my head till promoting this movie. That term started floating around. But, you know, it's like Alejandro's very picky and he's very specific with what he wants. And that is so often a luxury that's only granted to people who have a very stable safety net, right? It's like if you have a solid enough ground beneath your feet, then it's like people encourage you to like want Harvard and nothing less, or to like want to work for the New York Times and nothing less, and like all these things. And if you have fewer options, then it's like you're encouraged to cast a wider net and keep your options open and not be picky. And this movie sort of like explores someone with fewer options who has the audacity to be picky. And I think that's what makes him very specific, is that he is not the person with the most options. He is certainly not the person with the least options, but he knows what he wants and he just doesn't know how to get it. And what he wants is more than survival.
I really, really appreciated the aspiration choice. I thought that was really meaningful, and it did feel like it was kind of trying to challenge that you must aspire to Harvard notion, or that that's like what's expected of people who immigrate to America to want or to achieve. And I really, really, even at one point, we see Alejandro be offered a life raft of sorts, offered a paralegal job at the immigration office that he is seen visiting time and time again to meet with a representative who is helping him sort out his work visa and kind of follow up with him. And Alejandro rejects that job offer, which to me, in the moment, I was like, why would he not take that job? It was like right there. And instead, he was going to be picking this like more uncertain path in pursuit of what seemed like his actual dream. And I think it was so entertaining and heartening to watch Alejandro grow in defiance or in using his voice throughout the film, and to say, like, actually, you know, I think to what you said, survival isn't just enough for me. It's Hasbro or bust, baby.
Yeah, completely, completely. And it's not, because he is not a manual or an example of the model immigrant. This movie is not an informative video to play before you come to the US, right? It's the story of someone hyper specific.
I wanted to see if we could talk a little bit about your experience moving to the United States. Would you be interested in that?
Yeah. I came here in 2009 under a student visa. I went to the New School. Really, I just wanted a foot in the door. I just really wanted to be in New York. And a student visa is how I found that to be possible. I knew I wanted to be in New York to be a writer for TV and film. I didn't know anyone who worked in that arena. So then I graduated, and I still didn't know how to enter that the world that I wanted to be a part of. And so then I started doing, well, that period sort of inspired in many of the moments of this movie. But then I Julio, then started doing stand-up comedy as a way of finding an in, because it was a way of showcasing my writing that didn't need me to spend any money. So then that's the in that I found. And through that, then I got the opportunity to, you know, submit to writing for a TV show. And those are the very broad strokes of how I, quote unquote, got here.
Thanks so much for tracing that history for us. I feel like so much of what you've navigated in your own experience really came out in the film. And I wonder what you think are the major issues that impacted your journey to emigrate to the United States, perhaps even outside of immigration. I like to ask creative people for their solution to a problem that most plagues us as a country, at least as they've witnessed or experienced in their lives. So I want to put that question to you, Julio. If you were to use your creativity or imagination to wave a magic wand about a certain social problem that you've encountered, what would you want to do?
Oh my God. I think it's a great question. But time and time again, when I think about what ails specifically the U.S. is the insane wealth gap. And it feels like the answer keeps being like, tax the rich appropriately. And then we lose track of that. So then we pivot to purely symbolic wins and efforts that feel so commodified, feel so like memeified. I would love to stop seeking cosmetic answers to deeper problems.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that we focus a lot on through our systemic equality campaign. It's like a very clear tenet of racial justice work. Economic justice is really a huge core part of that. And I think that you're right there. You know, I think that everyone understands that there's a huge wealth gap in the country. And I think people can all kind of talk about it or some experience it, feel it, et cetera. But there does seem to be like a real like ineffectiveness or unwillingness to have the moral courage.
Well, there's unwillingness. I think that empathy is seen as extremely dangerous to capitalism. I think that this idea that, oh, well, if we're nice to that person, then we have to be nice to all people. And then what do we have left?
Yeah. The like limited pie idea.
The limited pie idea, which, you know, when I first got to the New School, I was very, very fortunate to receive a huge scholarship on behalf of the New School. I think they were so thirsty to have an international student. And I'm very grateful for it. But even at like 90% scholarship or whatever, the incredibly generous thing that I got, I still couldn't make the next semester work. And I asked for more money. And the financial aid office said that there was no more money for me, that I had received the maximum amount of money that I could be given. And then it's like, and then I'm like, why? Like, what do you mean? Like, aren't you building a new building? Like, aren't you like, who needs that statue over there? Who needs those flowers over here? Long story short, I ended up writing to the president and they threw me more money because I think they were jarred by the fact that I got his email and he just emailed him. And I, you know, I keep thinking about how it's almost like caring for people who have less is always seen as charity, is always seen as like brownie points or like bonus points. It's not seen as a necessity. Like I keep making the analogy that if you download an app and the app is not functioning well, next update, the app will have improved because they want to retain you as a customer. But the immigration system has shown no signs of wanting to improve because it's frankly not interested in people to keep coming. So that's the problem, that it's seen as sort of, that immigration is sort of seen as this like altruistic nuisance when it's actually imperative.
Yeah. And you're right. I think if we wanted to make change, it would be possible to do so. I want to pick up on one thing that you mentioned about your experience at the New School, and thank you so much for sharing that, because I do feel like that is so reflective of what so many young people are dealing with right now. You know, obviously at the ACLU, we care a lot about relieving student debt. We saw the Biden administration attempt to make that happen, and we saw what happened from the Supreme Court side, and the courts have struck that down, at least partially. Student debt seems like a difficult thing to translate across generations. There is this kind of misunderstanding that if you didn't experience it during your college time, then that's just, it's like an aberration or a problem that is due to irresponsibility or something. How would you make talking about student debt fun or interesting or more translatable?
It's easy to disregard it when it's in the abstract. And I that actually reminds me of being a teenager in El Salvador and wanting to come to the States immediately upon graduating high school and wanting to go to college here and not getting it through my head that wasn't financially possible, because it was all, as a teenager, it was all an abstraction to me. That, I mean, long story short, I ended up coming like 3 years after graduating school and was like a very, very old college student. Because that is the only way that I found to come here. But I, not really understanding my parents when they said, we can't do it. And it wasn't until my mom showed me her bank account. And she very transparently, she was like, here you go. Here it is, $800. $800 is what we have right now. that sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. Right now, it's this much. So, and how much is the school that you want to go to? Okay, do the math. And I feel like that should be applicable to this student loan conversation, where it's like, okay, if you think that this is like something that a generation, a lazy generation is making up, then okay, put the numbers on the table. How much were the loans? How much are the entry-level positions? How much experience do you need to get to those entry-level positions? And then you see that how much is rent? How much is buying a home? Forget buying a home. I don't know who's buying a home now. It's like, and you see that it's just not adding up.
Yeah, the math isn't mathing, for lack of a better phrase.
The math isn't mathing. And it's been so, and in retrospect, I'm so happy that I didn't, you know, put an arm and a leg on the table to try and get a loan to come earlier, because that would have ruined me. And it's like, looking back at like how utterly irresponsible and horrible it is for a bank to go to an 18-year-old and be like, so you want to be an actor? Okay, so it's like, take out a loan, just sign here. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Where were the adults there?
It's predatory.
Yeah.
And that's the story all too often. I think, you know, another one of the things that we talk about a lot, specifically in this moment when we have a lot of migrants showing up to our ports of entry, showing up to the border, you know, a lot of commentary across the country is like, oh, they're going to come into our communities and take resources that other people in the community need, et cetera, et cetera. And I think one of the things that is always missing is a part of that conversation. And I think this kind of brings it back to Problemista, it brings it back to your experience, it brings it back to this like conversation we're talking about of about money and the ability to accrue wealth or to have job is like, we don't give people authorization to work. We keep people locked in a system where they are perpetually going to exist in poverty. And then we blame them for that poverty and use that as an indicator to say, hey, actually, I told you there's no room for more migrants here, as opposed to saying, you can, if you come to our country and want to work, you can have authorization to work. It's like one of those things that it feels like we're creating the problem that then we're complaining about.
Completely. And first of all, I'm like, what are these resources that you think immigrants are taking away that you're giving out to Americans? Because I don't even see poor white Americans being helped. So like, what are these precious resources that are otherwise going to Americans, and who are those Americans that they're going to? Because it seems like, regardless of immigration, poverty is a big issue here. In terms of the be here legally but don't work until we tell you to, it's just a catch-22 that makes it so, and this is something that I've learned throughout my time here, is that being a quote unquote law-abiding citizen and being able to follow the rules at all times is a huge privilege and a luxury that not everyone has. And it's there's various thresholds. You know, I came here to the US legally, and at the time I did not realize what an incredible luxury it was to be able to hop on a plane and present a valid document upon entering the States, and how that in itself was such a luxury. But then it's like, you're set with so many rules that only those who are who have a very sound ground beneath them are able to cross. Otherwise, something's got to give, and you got to like find your little white lies along the way.
Yeah. Given all of the challenges and all of the things that we've named, what would you want to say to immigrants coming to the United States now?
So I'm going to talk to my former self rather than to all immigrants, which is, you know, make some time to live your life. make some time to make friends and find a community and find joy in all of this.
Yeah. And honestly, what a beautiful reflection of what you actually created in the movie Problemista, a film that really explores a piece of the immigration experience surrounded by a whole lot of joy and fantasy and fun and frivolity and intrigue and humor. I laughed a lot. I really did.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one thing that in talking about immigration, I always lose track on. It's like, if you haven't seen this movie, just keep in mind, it's a comedy.
It's a comedy. Yes. Julio, thank you so much for joining me. This was so lovely to speak with you about your work, about your personal history and journey into comedy, and to get your take on some of the most pressing issues that we're working on at the ACLU. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of At Liberty, please subscribe and rate the show. We really appreciate the feedback. Two special notes before we close. On March 26th, the 6 Degrees podcast is hosting an important episode featuring our LGBTQ rights work. On the episode, actor and host Kevin Bacon is joined with actress Laverne Cox and our very own Trey Strangio, Deputy Director for Transgender Justice at the ACLU. Together, they'll give an urgent update on the issues facing trans rights and how we can all be a part of protecting them. Be sure to catch the episode on March 26th wherever you get your podcasts. Are you a high school student fighting to make a difference in your community? Or do you know a high school student that is a changemaker? The ACLU is working with young people ages 15 to 18 from across the country for our annual National Advocacy Institute, an in-person event for high schoolers taking place in Washington, D.C., January 21st to the 27th. The Institute will feature workshops and seminars from top-level experts, trainings on how to get involved, and how to build super impactful advocacy campaigns, all culminating in a collective day of action on Capitol Hill. Financial aid is available for students who qualify, including round-trip travel stipends. Space for this year, 2024, is filling up fast. Head over to aclu.org/institute now to learn more and to sign up. At Liberty is a production of the ACLU, produced by me, Kendall Seismeyer, and Vanessa Handy. This episode is edited by the folks at Ultraviolet Audio. Genesis Mike Pio is our intern.